Our speaker in this lesson is Tom House. He's speaking about tobacco, alcohol, and marijuana.
The problem of the use of drugs doesn't just happen overnight. The fellow doesn't get up in the morning and just says, you know, I think I want to be a drug addict. And I need just to go find who it is that I can find to provide me with what it is that I want. It normally doesn't start that way. Usually something of this nature begins when there are those, especially among the young, spending their time together. There's someone that is a little bit more brazen possibly than the rest of them, and they want to try something on their own because they know it is a matter that either parents or those that are school administrators, teachers, or whatever, do not particularly appreciate. They would tell on us. It's something that has been prohibited from our youth. And that's just like telling little Johnny, don't touch the red button. I guarantee you, if little Johnny's got access to the red button, he's going to stare at it and he's going to watch and see what he can do till he finally finds out what the red button does. People that are involved in the drug culture or have a curiosity about the drug culture usually watch those that are involved somehow or the other, and they see how they are received. And if it's not something that is going to be so destructive, like, well, number one, they haven't been put in jail yet, and they haven't died yet. I mean, everybody's been talking about how this stuff is going to kill them all. And it hasn't happened to these yet, then it's not likely going to happen to me either. And then especially when one of these cats that are involved in it want to try to encourage someone to get involved in their particular crowd, and they tempt this innocent one to get involved in the practice of the use of these chemical agents, then a couple of reasons. One, they're looking for some self-justification themselves, and they also now, with another individual that's involved in the practice, he has that over his head. He's not going to tell anybody, because if he does about him, then he's involved in it as well, so it's cover for him. So the more that they get involved in it, it's better cover where they're concerned. So, it begins somewhere. One of the first things that a lot of young ones get involved in, and some of you have as well, some of you may still be using the old cancer weed itself, the cigarette that you buy at the store, and you may still be puffing. I don't misunderstand something tonight. I'm not picking on you. You know as well as I do how bad of a problem this is. You know what kind of problems you have as a result of its use. Now, just to give you an indication of what God thinks about all this, I'm going to introduce a passage for you to start with, and then I'll get into the rest of this. Now, we're going to talk a little bit more about this passage a little bit on Sunday, but a passage for our consideration this evening as it involves this drug culture is from Galatians, the 5th chapter. In this section, in beginning in verse 19 and following, you might remember, if you're a Bible student, you know that the Apostle Paul was here listing the works of the flesh. In verse 20 is particularly what it is that we want to view. It's the second word in that verse. That's the word witchcraft. That's what we're talking about. That's from the Greek term pharmakia. That's where we get our word pharmacy, pharmaceutical, or anything of that nature. What that represents is exactly the very thing that was taking place during the days of Christ and even prior. A lot of folks nowadays are under the impression, falsely by the way, that the drug culture is something that is a new thing. It's not. This is something that goes back millennia. This was a problem in the days of Christ and the days prior to Him. There were those that were known as sorcerers. You've heard of them. There are two different types, really, that you read about in the Bible. There were those that were sleight of hand men, what we would simply note as magicians or something of this nature nowadays. But the others were nothing more than glorified drug pushers. That's all they were. They would sell their potions, and the greater power that those potions had, the greater ability that those sorcerers were considered to have. Many of them, in fact, those of the people that lived during that time, thought some of them be men of the gods. And the greater the source of power of their potion, the greater sense of power that they themselves would have had. Now that gives you just an introduction of what God seems to think or does think about the practice of all of what we're discussing. But now let's bring this back around just for the moment where we're talking about just tobacco for the moment. This little weed. You remember Don Loney? He was a speaker from, this was back in the 50s and the 60s. We'd go around different places throughout schools and areas, community centers, and he would talk to young folks. But he had a point that he made about cigarette smokers. He said, what you've got is fire on one end, a sucker on the other. And that's precisely what it is that you have. And he had another little anecdote about it as well. He mentioned it like this. He says, it's rather interesting how when you're 13, 14 years old, you begin to smoke to prove that you're a man, and when you turn 30, you try to quit to prove the same thing. It's that same sense that we're seeing the efforts that are being made by numbers of individuals to try to quit because they realize the kind of problem that it brings them. Now, to bring God back into this little scenario, you remember, those of you that have tried it, that have smoked, do you remember what you did the first time that you tried it? You remember it? Those of you that have, and I don't want to show hands, but you know what I'm talking about. First draw that you did on that thing, what you did is you almost coughed your lungs out. Why'd you do that? Now, I don't imagine that many of you ever really thought about that simple little question. Why did you cough? That's nature's response. That is God's way of telling you that stuff don't belong there. I'm in Middle Tennessee. I can talk like that. We do that in Mississippi too. But that stuff does not belong there. That's the reason it naturally is expelling it from your system. God didn't make us to breathe carbon monoxide. He doesn't want it there. It's poison. He has made oxygen for us to breathe, for us to be able to use that. It is that which is inherent in us to help us with our capacities and our physiological makeup. When you go to the doctor now, you're going to know, especially if you've got heart problems or anything of that nature, they're going to check your oxygen levels. You have to have a good one. You don't need to rob your system of the things that, or that particular element that really keeps you alive. That's what it is that God's trying to tell you. Leave that stuff alone. Oh, we are stubborn, aren't we? And what we're going to do is we're going to continue to use this because old Jim Bob over here, he uses it and he looks cool. That's what we thought when we were young, that we wanted to be like that and we wanted to be able to walk around holding this and between our fingers and between our lips. And if we're a mechanic, we can let it hang out like that and whatever the situation is. Or if in fact I'm female, I can always do it like this and hold up my pinky. I can't imagine what it's like if my wife, bless her heart, were to ever take in something like this for me to reach down and kiss her and her have that smell on her. Yeah, baby, that's real good. I'd just soon not have that. You imagine what it would be like as well for some of these guys? They don't want to smoke it. They want to chew it. That's really got to help out someone that wants to have a date. And any gal that would want to go out with somebody like that's got to be desperate. I can't imagine wanting to beat up against somebody that's got that meth in their mouth. And not to mention, on the firewall of the truck, there in the cab, there it is, the spit cup. Oh, yeah. That goes over real good. What a lot of people do not realize is when they are involved in the use of tobacco, of course, there's the nicotine that's creates all different kinds. It's an addictive drug. It works a little bit like a stimulant, somewhat like an amphetamine would do, and that it increases the respiratory rate and the heart rate as well, but it is a highly addictive drug. In a concentrated form, nicotine, when it's brought down to its concentrated form, is a very powerful poison. They will use nicotine in these darts that they will use, like in Africa, to bring down rogue elephants. They have some running around. They'll shoot those things with those darts that have that concentrated form of nicotine, drop those rounders in their tracks. That just kind of gives you an idea of the power behind it. But then there's also the tar. That's the second element that is involved in the use of tobacco, which is the carcinogen. That's what causes the problems with the cancer. That's what builds up inside the lungs. Have you ever seen a smoker's lung? I don't know if any of you have ever seen that or not. Some of you have. You know exactly what I'm talking about. If you've ever seen the difference between a healthy lung and a smoker's lung, there have been autopsies and things of this nature where these things have been brought out and would be stood up beside one another so you can make the comparison. I remember when I was in the ninth grade, that was my first exposure to that. They showed the film of this in my junior high school right after lunch. That gave you an idea. They had to close school that afternoon. They had to clean up the place. Now, let me just give you the idea. It made everybody sick. Here you're watching a healthy, pink-looking lung that is not involved in tobacco use, and then showed then the smoker's lung, which had now, at the beginning stage of cancer, this one did. It had a green slime and all of this business on it, but it was just black charcoal with that slime all over it. That is a smoker's lung. That's appetizing, isn't it? I'm going to warn you that some of the things that I'm going to talk about tonight, and I'm not here to sensationalize anything, I cannot draw a fair picture of this culture. I didn't come here to do that. So some of the things I'm going to talk about are not going to be very pleasant. I want you to understand that. And that's the way that it is with even tobacco. Not to mention the carbon monoxide that we talked about a minute ago with it, which is a poison that can kill. Another one of our substances with which we have tremendous amount of problem, obviously, is alcohol. Alcohol is nothing really more than a barbiturate drug itself. I don't know how many of you are familiar with barbiturates. These are the kinds of drugs that once you take them, they will slow down the heart rate and the respiratory rate. They're used for people that have nervous problems and things of that nature. But barbiturates or alcohol works in that very same vein. What it will do is will cause numbing in the capacity an individual has to reason, to be able to react, his capacity to speak. All of these functions are affected by the use of alcohol. During my course of time when I was active involved in law enforcement, had to deal with several different individuals that were constant users of alcohol. You had some just kind of like Otis on Mayberry, you know. We laugh at Otis. We see how that, of course, it's done in the vein to be somewhat innocent where Otis is concerned. But all not like Otis. Most of the ones we deal with are not those that bring themselves walking to the jail cell, open up the jail cell themselves and go down and go to sleep. That would be nice if that were the case, but generally that's something that never takes place. It depends on the kind of alcohol you have to deal with and what kind of individual you're going to be dealing with. Wine drinkers have a tendency to kind of be mellow. And they laugh, you know, just anything. And things don't affect them just a great deal. It's just kind of ease through situations. A whiskey drinker has a tendency, most occasions, now these are general terms, whiskey drinkers have a tendency to cry. They want to cry all the time. There's some that get a little agitated, but that depends on the individual, but they just get sloppy. They just fall all over themselves, and they have a tendency to want to cry. Beer drinker, again, based upon the physical nature of the individual himself, a lot of them are very belligerent. They want to fight all the time. Those are some of the ones we had. You had the greatest dread of dealing with somebody who was beer drunk. Because when you have to deal with them, you know a fight's coming. We had one fellow we had to deal with on a rather persistent basis. You had to fight him constantly. He would get so wired up, it was almost impossible to subdue him. We had on one occasion when he came in, there were about six officers, I think, that were trying to hold him down and just simply could not do it. He was not that large a fellow, smaller than I am, and they could not bring him down. And finally, a dispatcher came in. Now, the dispatcher, you'd have to know him. He's about 430-some-odd pounds. He grabbed a baseball bat and popped his head. That took care of that. And then just carried him in. But that just kind of gives you an idea of what it is we're dealing with this. Now, one morning I got a call. There was a woman that was laying in the ditch out in front of Fred's department store. So I go out to check about her, and sure enough, she's in the ditch. She's wearing a white T-shirt and a pair of blue jeans, and she's face down in the ditch. I thought she was dead to start with, and then I turned her over, and I knew who she was. But I saw Nell. Nell was only at that time about 56 years old, but you'd look at her, you would have thought she was closer to 80. This is all she'd done all her life, just one little party to the next, I guess, and just stayed drunk the biggest portion of the time. You turn her over, the smell is awful. She had vomited all over herself, so her shirt was yellow and still had particles from where she had vomited on herself. And now I have to pick her up and put her in the patrol car and then carry her to jail. But this is the kind of thing I have to do. Here, this woman did not get up in that morning expecting that this would be the way that her day was going to end. Most of these people that get involved in this kind of thing never consider what it is that's going to be coming before the day's out. But these are the things I had to have to deal with. We brought one fellow in. If I remember correctly, he was around about 57, 58 years old. And I was patting him down and getting him ready to put him in jail. And he could not hold his functions any longer. And so he urinates all over himself and over me and out in the floor. Here's an individual, supposedly a grown-up. You would expect out of somebody that's 57, 58 years old and be able to handle his bodily functions. Here is someone that can't. Biggest portion of the time, I don't care what age they are, when they're under the control of this kind of thing, they in many cases don't even know when they have gone. They just turn loose and let it roll. And that's the way you find them in many situations. They're wet all over, smell. Now, not everyone, again, is going to bring themselves to this particular type of end on a daily basis. But a person keeps using it, I don't care if he lives in a mansion, he'll find himself eventually where his mind has been eaten up by the power of that alcohol that is eating away not only his liver but his brain cells, which do not repair, incidentally. And eventually it comes to a point where that individual is essentially drunk all the time, whether he drinks or not. And there have been those that I have seen just like that. My wife had one of her family members. She was a constant wine drinker. And it finally would come to the point, even when she would come to church, she may not have had any in quite some time, but she was drunk regardless. It had just eaten away her brain to the point where she couldn't function very well. We have other problems with some other lighter substances. Some of the problems that we're finding now, especially among a lot of our young and a lot of our athletes, anabolic steroids. It's estimated that somewhere about 12-15% of a lot of our high school athletes have been involved in the use of anabolic steroids that's supposed to build up muscle mass and things of this nature. That is a very serious trend because of the problems that it as well also causes. But I'm going to run out of time if I don't get on to the problem of marijuana. Marijuana is a leafy plant that will come anywhere between 8 and 12 feet. You'll be able to recognize it in most occasions because it has an odd number of leaves. Not never even, always odd number, 3, 5, 7, 9. Has a kind of a dark color top, a little lighter color on the bottom, and has a very distinctive odor to it. The technical term for marijuana is cannabis sativa. The active ingredient in it is a drug called delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol. It is very potent. It is something now that you're seeing a great deal about within the news, some arguing the fact that it is a harmless drug. It really doesn't do much of any kind of harm whatsoever where the human body is concerned. In fact, they are trying to impress upon the public that it is something that is readily used for the easing of pains and situations with those that are very seriously ill. I have a hard time believing anybody that would suggest that it has any medicinal use whatsoever. It may have, but I am having a hard time based upon information that I see that would be the case. It has ways of affecting the human body which are rather traumatic. Even though it's the case that some of these things don't just manifest themselves in ways that just like you have some sort of lesion on you or something of that nature. It doesn't come out necessarily like that. The effects not only are direct, but there are so many indirect problems that come with it as well that that's what creates the problems for everybody else. Let me give you an idea what I'm talking about. Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol has an effect on an individual's eyesight. You've heard that. What it does is causes your pupils to dilate. Now, that doesn't sound like it's something that's serious. Only, really, I suppose, if you're driving. So that's where it comes into a serious problem where those of us in law enforcement are involved. They don't see that well at night. They are highly attracted to light because everything else is out of focus. You know how a camera works, single-lens reflex camera operates. I hope you do. I don't know if you do or not, but let me give you a little explanation of it. A single-lens reflex camera is one where the settings on it, you can move the aperture and also the settings on your camera to allow less amount of light, more amount of light, and the shutter speed. The quicker the shutter, the less amount of light. Slower the shutter, more light's going to be brought in. That's the same way your eye works. That's the reason why it changes size depending upon the way on the light. If you're outside, what does your pupil do? It gets smaller. That's to allow in less light to allow you to be able to focus with everything around about you. When you get in the dark, it opens up to allow in more light so that you might be able to focus to see what it is that you're doing. When you're under the influence of Delta 9 THC, it's going to dilate. So that means that there's more light coming in. If it gets too wide, everything still is out of focus, even if it's at night. That's the reason why, on a lot of occasions, you're going to see those that are, you can get a hint that this person may be using marijuana if they're wearing shades at night. Because what this does is it helps to reduce the amount of glare that's coming in. But now here's what happens particularly when they're driving. They cannot distinguish things very well. So that's the reason why they're attracted to light. That's the reason why also that many individuals that are under the influence of Delta 9 THC will be involved in head-on collisions. They are attracted to the lights that are coming at them. They will also run into telephone poles trying to get to the light at the top. They cannot distinguish exactly where it is. And so they'll run into the poles trying to get to the light. They at least know it's there, but they're trying to see if there's anything around the pole that they might be able to have some sense of focus to know where they might be able to go. Usually, it's out of sort to such an extent that they can't distinguish. That's the reason why they hit it. Years ago, there was the old two-lane road that used to come from Tupelo to Fulton. There's a little rise in that area in the highway. It's not that much, but it's just enough that it's a fair little hill that you have to go over there. There were calls that were coming in that there was a fellow coming from Tupelo heading toward Fulton, and he was all over the road. There was a fellow in a semi-rig that was heading west on Old 78, and he was watching the car come over the hill on his side of the road. He'd been hearing about it, but now he's on his side of the road. And he thought that that might have been who it was, but then he got back on the other side, and he said, well, maybe things are all right. So he continues to go, but just about the time that he gets up close to that vehicle, then it veers back over and hits that truck head on. He's going a fair amount of speed. You ought to have seen what that did to that truck. It took the whole front end out from under that truck. Took the front axle out from it and set it off elsewhere. The truck itself went off to the right side of the road without... The driver, he did fine. But that was the main problem that took place where his truck was concerned. The whole front axle completely gone and messed up the rest of the truck. Now then, this young man that was driving that car, this was on the night, so I wasn't working then. So I went the next day to look at the car. Now, they had to cut him out of that car in 8 different pieces. That'd give you an idea of what we're dealing with. When I go to look at the car the next morning, of course, I walk up to it. You come up to the back, you don't see that much of a problem with it because you see the rear lights and everything intact in the back. But you get beside the car, and it's just about the width of maybe 2.5 of these pews right here. There's not much otherwise left of that. When I approach the car, there's a cat that's sitting on what's left of the dash and making a meal of something. And as I go up to approach it, then I recognize exactly what it is, what left of the brains of that young man, the other portion of which was in the back seat, or what was left of it. It spread him all over the place. And people want to try to tell me that there's no harm or danger in the use of Delta 9 THC. Here's a fellow that was under its influence. Not only had he been using this, but he'd been drinking on top of it as well. So he had a double dose of it all. But the problem that was coming with what it was that ultimately led him into the path of this truck was the fact that it was affecting his eyes. Young ladies, if you have any inclination whatsoever of getting married and you want to have children, you better leave this alone as well. Good Lord has blessed you with some 4,000 eggs. They don't reproduce once they're destroyed. Delta 9 THC will destroy those eggs. They don't reproduce. I hope you heard me. But this will destroy them. Those, in fact, that have used marijuana when they were pregnant, in fact, have created all kinds of problems for those fetuses. Severe deformities. And then if, in fact, they do happen to be born where they're not deformed, the health problems that come to them are just on and on. There is nothing good that comes from this, young men. It works essentially in the same way. It can cause infertility in young men. So if you have any inclination as well as having a family, this might be something that you want to rethink about your engagement with the use of marijuana. On top of this, most of us do not know exactly how marijuana looks in its processed form. It looks a little bit like ground oregano. If in fact that you are parents, maybe to come up on something in your child's drawers or anything like this that looks like okra seeds. But the difference is on marijuana seeds, it has a little hat on it. And you'll be able to tell the difference. Okra seeds, just a smooth little round seed. You know what I'm talking about. But imagine an okra seed with a little hat. You get an idea of what it is you may be dealing with. But how many, having seen it, would be able to distinguish processed marijuana from phencyclidine, or what we know as PCP or Angel Dust? It can be processed to look just like processed marijuana. And there are those that try to also promote the use of PCP, which is really a hard narcotic in and of itself. It is a mind-bending drug. It has a tendency to cause a lot of self-inflicted wounds, it causes a great agitation. In other words, even to the extent it might even cause harm to someone who's very close to you, and including yourself. Let me give you an idea what I mean. Some years ago, I was speaking at an event in Tupelo at the Civic Center. There were several different law enforcement officers there and several out of the medical community that each and every one of us had a specific drug about which we had to address. Mine, I was talking about marijuana, but there was another one that was talking about PCP, and he connected this together with the use of marijuana as well. And he talked about the problem that is consistent with it in this nature. He gave an example. In fact, the matter is, he had a set of slides. And the set of slides that he had were actually the scenes in a morgue. There were three fellows in there lying on the morgue table. He says, let me tell you about these three fellows. They're from the area close to New Orleans. They were all friends, very close friends. They were kind of novice drug pushers. They would wait for shipments to come in out of Colombia across the Gulf, and they would pick them up there on the Gulf and then sell their goods in and around the areas of New Orleans. Not very good as far as their efforts were concerned there. They were certainly not chemists. They were great friends and big duck hunters. And this is what they did. Duck season's about to come about, so they had their weekend set up that they were going to prepare their blinds. So they got their machetes out. You know what a machete is. Every one of them had machetes. They're going out and cutting brush and getting ready to put together the blinds, getting ready for the duck season. But after they'd done that for a while, they decided they'd have a little pot break. Now, I don't know, and he didn't know either, as to whether or not they had put it in there or whether or not somebody else had put it in the materials that they had bought. Whatever it was, their marijuana was laced with PCP. Now, this is what happened. After they got under its influence, they decided they would have a little cutting party. So they started cutting on one another. Now, this is three friends. They were cut anywhere from 10 to 18 times, every one of them. One of them actually lived for about 45 minutes after they found him. He was cut in his throat all the way to his spine here. I don't know how he lived as long as he did, but the rest of them they found, they were already dead. But you would already be able to see, laying on the table there, where the cuts had carried them to the bones were exposed. Entrails and all this kind of business exposed. They killed one another. Something that they wouldn't even thought about doing had they not been under the influence of fenciclidine. And they would have not been involved with that, most likely at all. But they didn't recognize when they put it in their little joint that that's what it was that they were getting. And this is how they end up. Now let me explain something. Usually it is the case when we grow up, especially in our years as teens and early adulthood, we look forward to the occasion when we turn 18 years old, because this is the occasion when I'm out away from mom and dad. They're not telling me what to do, not telling me to take out the garbage and make beds and all, do my homework and all that business. We're tired all here and all that. Want to be on my own. Leave me alone. This is my space. Don't want to be told what to do. Now, this is one of the interesting things about this, because the very ones that are of that disposition are the very ones on many occasions to get involved in the use of marijuana or alcohol. But any of these particular chemicals that we're talking about during the course of this week. But to think about it like this. When in fact your mom and dad tells you something that you didn't particularly want to do, you could voice your opinion back. I don't want to do that. Leave me alone. We might be able to fuss back. When you get under the influence of marijuana, this is something that has no brain, no mouth, nothing to tell you Jimmy, do this. Jimmy, do that. Don't do this. Don't do that. It doesn't have that to do it. Nevertheless, it pretty much tells you everything you're going to do. That's what it means to be under its influence. If any fact's just like this boy I was telling you about a minute ago, when he's driving his vehicle, when he's under the influence, this is what tells him what to do. When these boys were out cutting their brush, having no inclination of anybody else telling them anything else, they're independent. And now the drug is telling them, take the machete and cut Jimmy. Oh, he's going to swing at you. Let's swing back. That's what this does. You can't fuss with it. You can't argue with it. It tells you what to do. And then comes the results, just like what I explained. And there are people that are walking around nowadays thinking that I'm immune. It won't happen to me. You're right. Graveyards are full of people that thought that. I've had to talk to parents. I've had to talk with students. I've had to talk with different ones that had to deal with things like that. Oh, you think that this is the worst of it? You wait till tomorrow night and I'll tell you some of the other stories that come with these hard drugs. Some of these things are heartbreaking, but that's what comes. March 24th, 2011, my parents were murdered. I found them. Fella next door killed them. Strangled my mother, took a knife and stuck it in her chest. My dad comes home an hour later, and he's going to do essentially the same thing, except he sticks the knife in his neck and leaves it. The reason why that fella did this is his statement in his deposition. I had to hit a home run. He had just come out of prison 6 months before. He could not function out of prison. He wanted to go back. He'd been trying to steal, to do other things, to get somebody's attention, to send him back to prison. Couldn't get anybody's attention. So this in his statement to quote, I had to hit a home run. So that's the reason he killed my parents. A few weeks before that happened, he had a handful of drugs, illicit materials, that he had set down on the table in his kitchen and told his mother, you need to call the sheriff to send me off. Or she wouldn't do it. And now here we are. You say, what did I mention this for? Number one, this fellow was acting on an impulse to have to do something that felt made him feel very big or would make him a big man on campus in prison. But like a lot of others, most of it had its center in the use of these illicit materials, because that's why he had been there before. And the reason why I would tell you that is this. We have a tendency to overlook the things that are going around about us. We don't tell anybody in the law enforcement community. We complain that they're not doing anything. I know that such and such is going on over here, and I know such and such is going on over here, and we don't do anything else about it. Or we wonder why it is the law enforcement people don't act upon what it is that you might be telling them. It's not that easy. But I can tell you this. It never gets cured if somebody doesn't say something. If some attention's not drawn to the problem by those of us in the community, how do you expect them to ever do anything about it? It will never take place. Now, I can tell you this. I'm not going to draw a rosy picture with this either. The people that are involved in this culture are ruthless. But the only way you get rid of people like that is you have to have enough spine to say, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. And we have to do what's necessary to bring it to a close. I've talked about a number of things that are the dark side of the human condition. We don't like hearing these things. We don't like knowing about these things. But these are things you have to hear about. Because we know that the problems that do exist, we may be the only answers that might be able to bring some cure to all of this. There are numbers of people, ladies and gentlemen, that are walking around in the world of darkness and sin. And we don't think any more about them than we do about the ones that are having drug problems. We need to be concerned about them too. A lot of these folks, the only connection that they're going to have with anything spiritual, the only connection that many of them may have with the way they need to go and the direction they need to take on a spiritual basis so they can go to heaven may be you. You need to exemplify what's right, but not only exemplify it, but you need to put them on the proper course and show them the way to go. Perhaps it's thinking in your head, I don't want the problems that are associated with this kind of life. I know this is something based upon the statement that we noted a minute ago in Galatians chapter 5, where he mentioned the term witchcraft, and you go right on through the list in verse 21, and they which do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. I want to make it to the kingdom of God. I want to go to heaven. So the Apostle Paul would suggest to us there are ways that the Lord has told us to go. It's only through me, Jesus states. You can't get to the Father except by me, John 14, 6. But if I'm going to go that way, I need to know how to get to you, how to go through you. Jesus says, unless you believe I am He, you die in your sin, John 8, 24. Jesus says, except you repent of your sins, you're going to perish. That's an either-or proposition. That's fitting, isn't it? Everything that we've been talking about here tonight is really an either-or proposition. Either I can take this and have the problems that are consistent with it, or I can leave it alone and generally I can be on the safe path. Well, it's the same way where sin's concerned. Either I can go the route that the Lord wants me to, or I can reject that. I can repent or perish. I am compelled by virtue of the love that He's expressed to confess His name with the mouth before men. And this unto salvation, Romans chapter 10, verse 10. But to get into Christ, Galatians 3 tells us, we're baptized into Christ. If you haven't done that tonight, you have an opportunity to become a child of God. It's the blood of Christ which cleanses us. It doesn't make any difference how serious the sin may be, how stained, sin blemished you may be. The blood of Christ can cleanse it. Well, if you want that cleansing tonight, you know now what it is you need to do. There may be those that have walked that path and have done those very things, but have soiled themselves again by walking off in the course of the world. You should be compelled as well tonight to return back to Him. Reconcile with God and brethren tonight.